Welcome to the Fretboard Journal podcast. I am Jason Verlinde, the publisher of the Fretboard Journal magazine. And every week, I try to speak to somebody from the world of guitars, whether that's a world-class player, an instrument maker, or maybe just somebody with a good story to tell behind their fretted instrument of choice. And today, I'm talking to Gwennifer Raymond, all the way from Brighton, England. Gwennifer is an exceptional instrumental guitarist working in what I guess is now called the American primitive movement of guitars. That is basically all those folks who were deeply, deeply influenced by the music of John Fahey and Robbie Basho and the music of Tacoma Records. We cover a lot of ground in a short period of time. She is fascinating. She has a PhD. She is a video game programmer, and she also is an amazing touring musician. She's got a lot to talk about. She has a new record out on Tompkins Square called You Never Were Much of a Dancer. It is great, even if you don't listen to it. Check out the album cover online because it is one of the coolest, strangest, oddest album covers I've ever seen, and we get the backstory on that on this podcast. Our first sponsor for the podcast is our friends over at Lee Valley. For years, Lee Valley has provided woodworkers and hobbyists with some truly exceptional tools. And now, by popular demand, they are offering dozens of tools specifically for the world of guitar making. Everything you need, from those first rough cuts to fret files, pick guards, nut and saddle blanks, and a lot more. You can go to leevalley.com and see what they have in stock. You can just type in the word guitar to see at least the tip of the iceberg of all the tools that they have for guitar makers. There are a lot more if you dig around. To sweeten the deal, I'm going to offer a $25 gift certificate to Lee Valley that you can enter to win just by emailing us at fretboardjournal@gmail.com and putting the words Lee Valley in the subject line. We've already given a few of these away. I would love to give away a few more. Regardless, go to leevalley.com and check out what they are up to. And if you talk to them, by all means, tell them the Fretboard Journal podcast sent you. I am not sure if our next sponsor needs any more tools because I have been to their shop and they have a full service repair and restoration workshop that is filled to the brim with tools, but maybe they do. It's Retrofret Vintage Guitars over in New York City, one of my all-time favorite vintage instrument stores in the entire world. A cabinet of wonders, as I've said before, of fretted instruments from the last 200 years, whether that is a electric guitar or amplifier or an oddball banjo or mandolin or tenortrope dobro. They seem to carry it all, so many amazing guitars under one roof. And right now on their brand new website, which you should check out, they have not one but two Larson Brothers guitars. I think I may have mentioned the Stahl Artist Special Style 9, the over-the-top one with all the ornamentation on last week's podcast. They also have a far more austere unlabeled 1925 guitar that just looks incredible and is probably a great entry point if you've always wanted a Larson Brothers guitar. They also have far more modest treasures like the gorgeous-looking Silvertone amp with the case set, an Oscar Schmidt Beltone guitar from 1925, which at $1,600 is cheaper than a lot of new ladder brace guitars that are trying to emulate the whole blues mojo thing. This thing's got, it's the real deal. And a lot more. As always, if you go to Retrofret, tell them the Fretboard Journal sent you, and you should go to Retrofret because if you're listening to this podcast, their inventory is right up your alley. And last but definitely not least is our friends over at Dying Breed Music. Lane over at Dying Breed seems to always land some amazingly cool vintage flat top guitars from the golden era, and I don't know what happened over the last 2 weeks since we last talked about him. But he's gotten some amazing guitars, including a 36 Gibson Trojan, a 37 Martin 00028, a 38 Martin D18, a 1944 D28, and, drumroll, the 1933 Martin D28 12-fret shade top slot head that was used by Norman Blake for many years and was also featured on Kenny Smith's a couple of Kenny Smith records. Lane's asking for, are you sitting down, $3 million for this one. But I'm guessing if you're serious and you want to work out a deal, he would be open to that. And if you do work out a deal on these or any of the guitars, I hope you tell him the Fretboard Journal sent you. And Lane, if you're listening, if that $3 million guitar sells, I want, because of us, I want like a percent commission or something. Something. Anyways, Dying Breed Music, you can go to dyingbreedguitars.com to see his entire inventory. He's got some lower-end vintage flat tops as well. I just pointed out all these over-the-top guitars that he just got in the last month or so. And you can, again, reach him at 870-818-3434. Over on fretboardjournal.com, I have just posted an interview excerpt that I did with Ry Cooter. That's going to be appearing in its entirety in our Fretboard Journal Electric Guitar Annual, which is a few weeks out from mailing to everyone. I've said this before, I'll say it again. This is not included in a normal Fretboard Journal subscription. It is its own thing. I know that not everybody's going to want it. And so we're just kind of creating it as a standalone product, like it's a t-shirt or a hoodie or anything else that we sell separately from the subscription. We also have a brand new video with Nathan Salzberg, another amazing fingerstyle instrumental guitar player. You've probably seen him backing up Joan Shelley. We've covered him in the past before. He's even been on this podcast way, way back. Incredible video. You should watch that. We will be having new videos next week with Joe Henry, John Pizzarelli, and yesterday here at this very office in Seattle, we did a great video shoot with the Danny Barnes Trio, so that'll be showing up on fretboardjournal.com. fairly soon. As always, if you want to finally subscribe to our reader-supported magazine, head on over to fretboardjournal.com. Use the coupon code PODCAST. You will save $5 off your order. If you hate ordering online, you can also call us at 877-373-8273, and the odds are 1 in 4 that I'll be the one answering the phone. You can also, while you're at fretboardjournal.com, pre-order that electric issue. We still have some copies. Like I've said before, we're not going to print thousands of extra copies just because I hate wasting things. I hate wasting paper. So we're basically selling to the number that we've sold via pre-orders, and then it will be gone. Anyways, without further ado, here is our conversation with Gwenifer Raymond. Thank you so much for tuning in to the Fretboard Journal podcast. So Gwenifer, you just came from your day job. What is your day job?
I'm a video game programmer.
Okay. How long have you been doing that?
For a while, I guess. I mean, something like, it must be 6 years or something now.
Okay. And do you have a specialty? Are these games I would have heard of?
It depends. I used to be an AI programmer on the Total War franchise.
Okay.
But ever since then, I just sort of little games here and there.
Is that a big industry in London or in England, I guess?
I'm based in Brighton, and yeah, it's Brighton's kind of is one of the big hotspots in the UK for it. That's sort of kind of why I moved here in the first place.
Okay, and Josh from your label told me you have a PhD in astrophysics.
Yeah, I do.
Does that translate over to the world of video game programming?
I'm good at maths. That's certainly how I got my first job in it many years ago, because I have absolutely zero formal training in it whatsoever.
That's amazing. So, so even if I didn't love your record, which I do, I would have to say it gets the album cover of the year award regardless of the content inside. Is that your house?
No, it's my father's house back in Cardiff. He's a painter, so he collects, one of the things he does is that he collects taxidermy and uses them for reference.
Wow. And did you grow up around a lot of stuffed animals?
Not too many. When my parents separated, he was allowed to get a lot more, I think.
Okay.
It's very odd, because we're all a very a family of very avowed vegetarians, so it's an odd hobby for a vegetarian, collecting taxidermy.
I would say so, yeah. So where did you grow up?
I grew up originally just sort of north of Cardiff in Wales, just the very tip of the Rhondda Valley.
Okay. And family was into music or not really?
Yeah, no, very certainly. Yeah, I mean, they were both 60s, 70s art college students, so you can imagine they were kind of very into the Bob Dylan and Velvet Underground and all that sort of era of stuff. So I grew up with a lot of those records lying around, and my brothers were all very into music.
And then when did the guitar or banjo come into your life?
Well, when I was like, see, I had no interest in music at all when I was a kid, like most kids.
Sure.
But when I was about 8, my mum bought me a copy of Nirvana Nevermind on cassette.
Of course.
Yeah, because that's how she rolls. And yeah, it just blew my mind. I was like, I was only a little kid. And I was just used to run around the house like a total psychopath with all my headphones. And that year, yeah, I asked if I could have a, guitar for my birthday or for Christmas or something. And it was quite funny because I think there was a program on in the school where they put on a few lessons for all the kids, and everyone else had these acoustic guitars, and I had this bright red Stratocaster that I
Nice.
was very proud of.
You being asked to turn it down all the time, or not really?
Yeah, well, they can ask.
Yeah. So, did you got some lessons through school, and were you trying to play Nirvana from the get-go, or something
Yeah,
else? Yeah. Okay.
pretty much all. I started off playing lots of heavy stuff. I was like, I spent most of my teenage years playing in punk bands all around the valleys. But it was sort of later, really, that I just because like all those guys, they this they their influences are, so you can trace them back to those early blues guys. I mean, obviously Nirvana famously covered Lead Belly. But
Sure.
similarly, Dylan and the Velvet Underground and all that, those they had, they have those strong early pre-war blues influences. So I think eventually I, through reading and listening to stuff that was suggested through their own playlists, I kind of fell upon, yeah, blues music, Mississippi John Hurt, Skip James, and all that sort of stuff.
Okay. And what kind of punk bands were you in?
Really noisy ones.
Okay.
I was a big fan of. I like. I've always liked the angular, kind of slightly weird stuff. So I was always into, the Fall and a Gang of Four and
Sure.
guys like that. Big. I was a really big. It's not obviously not quite punk, but I was a really big Butthole Surfers fan. So for a long time, that was my main influence. Was I wanted to be in the Butthole Surfers.
Okay. And so the artsier side maybe of punk.
Sure, yeah, not so much the oi oi. I always like
Yeah.
a bit of noise in there, something a bit uncomfortable maybe.
Yeah. So when you kind of stumbled upon blues music or old time music or whatever through these playlists, did you even have an acoustic guitar at that time?
I think I did. I probably did.
Yeah.
I don't think I played it very much.
Yeah.
But sure, I mean there was always, the sort of the both sides of it because of all of the Dylan and the Neil Young, Patti Smith, all of that 60s Greenwich Village stuff lying around the house.
Yeah. And
But it was definitely the thing that got me to play it a bit more
yeah.
properly.
And at this point, were you already a programmer?
No, I mean that was quite late. I was going to be a scientist for a very long time, and then I got sick of academia, so I taught myself programming.
Okay. You're going to be a punk
Yeah.
rock scientist.
Yeah, I
That's
guess.
pretty cool.
There's a lot of characters in science, I think.
So when I mean, obviously this American primitive movement, as it's called, I still kind of cringe when I have to say that, but the music of you were clearly deeply influenced by John Fahey and those early Tacoma records. Do you remember hearing Fahey for the first time?
I don't remember the moment of hearing Fahey for the first time, but it was I first heard Fahey because it was a little bit after I had started getting into guys like John Hurt, and I found this teacher in Cardiff, and I'd already been playing the guitar for a really long time at that point, but I thought because I heard this guy and I really liked his style, I thought it would be cool to try and pick up some stuff from him, and it was him that originally played me like a Fahey record. I do remember thinking something along the lines of, because I'm not really great at learning other people's songs
Sure.
because I have a bit of an attention deficit problem,
Okay.
so I'll learn 10 seconds of a song and then I'll start playing something else, that I'm sort of making up. And I think it accidentally, because of all the John Hurt and Skip James I was listening to at the time, it was kind of accidentally a bit John Fahey, because obviously those were his huge influences. So when I first heard it was a bit, it was quite it was quite especially interesting to me because it was the first time I realized that I didn't need to sing or anything. It was hearing someone who was doing the sort of guitar playing that I liked playing and that clearly was able to express himself entirely instrumentally.
Yeah. So since you mentioned you don't really like to covering songs is kind of hard sometimes because of your attention span. Were you already at this point trying to do some acoustic instrumentals like the, you know, you are doing now?
Yeah, I think I had much more in the, I guess, in the more traditional blues vein, but certainly, yeah, I was starting to write sort of solo guitar blues numbers at that time.
Yeah. What's the music scene like for you playing out, you know, this kind of music? Are you finding clubs that are in your area that embrace this kind of music?
I'm finding more now. So after my records come out, I am getting a lot more gigs in. It's always been a bit of an odd scene because it is so niche, and I think it isn't as popular here as it is in the States. Although I might be wrong about that. I said that with a little bit more sort of press coverage, I'm starting to see more shows coming in. But there's a lot of stuff. I mean, the American primitive is a strange genre, and it's just something I've been thinking about a lot recently, in that because it's very, very niche.
Yeah.
So sometimes you're not always on necessarily very sympathetic lineups because they don't really exist sometimes.
Yeah.
But in the same way, it sits really nicely in a quite a broad range of genres, which in some ways is quite useful because you find yourself being booked on what seem like quite disparate lineups. I've been playing, you know, country and Americana and folk, but also a lot of like alternative jazz and avant-garde nights. It's just kind of interesting that it sort of sits in this weird space musically.
Yeah, and are you, you know, the record is all acoustic and there's banjo and some fiddle on there, but are you doing what Fahey did? Are you starting to kind of do electric guitar improvisations in this sort of style?
Oh, I've always done that a little bit just because I play a lot of electric guitar and I still play in electric bands. So sometimes I will do strange little pieces, you know, when I've just got an electric guitar in my hand. It has to be said, I do like for this the purity of the acoustic guitar. There's something about just seeing what you can do with nothing really in between you and, you know, the world. It's, you know, you've got an acoustic guitar and that's it. And I quite like that in a sense. I think somehow I find it maybe easier to express emotionally more
mm-hmm.
on an acoustic guitar, you know, because the sound of the fingers and the bashing of the wood, which I do a lot sometimes when I get a bit overexcited. There's something I like about the purity of the acoustic. I mean, I guess at some point maybe I'll start writing more seriously on an electric, but at the moment it's not something I'm particularly thinking about.
Yeah. And what kind of acoustic guitar are you using these days?
Oh, well, the album the album was recorded on a 1929 Bradley Kincaid Hound Dog, which is a Supertone knockoff, a little parlor guitar. But at the moment, I'm playing this guitar that I got from Henry Kaiser
sure.
when I was in the States. Yeah, so he gave me a guitar.
Okay, thanks, Henry.
Apparently, he's really, really cool. Thanks, Henry Mendes. Cheers.
Were you guys corresponding before this, or
no?
Okay.
He wrote to I think he saw my music video, and he wrote to Josh and said that he had a guitar that he wanted to give me. And I was like, "Oh, cool, man. Thanks." So I went to the States a couple of months ago, and he had it shipped to where I was playing.
Wow! What did he send you?
It's an 1890 guitar by a maker called I always get this slightly wrong, Joseph Bowman or Bowman, I think.
Yeah.
Who he used to proclaim that he was the greatest instrument manufacturer in the world. And yeah, it's a really good guitar. It's so strange. It's got a really nice, slightly bowed back. So rather than like, it almost, instead of an arch top, it's like an arch bottom.
Yeah.
Very slightly. I mean, people keep on commenting that it's small, but I think it's kind of big. But I think it's because I'm used to playing parlor guitars. But it's got this really sort of beautiful, warm, slightly dark tone. I think he had two, apparently. And the other one he used to record the soundtrack for Grizzly Man on.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, so it's a good guitar.
Yeah,
that sounds. I mean, it sounds amazing. I'm kind of convinced. I wrote to him when he gave it to me to say thank you, and I said that I'm pretty convinced it's like possessed by some weird guitar playing spirit, because there is something about it that makes you play both, you know, very well, but also really aggressively.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it's nice.
And the guitar that you recorded with, where did that one come from?
I just bought that. I was walking past a guitar shop in Brighton, and I saw this guitar that had this is terrible. This is about 90% of the reason that I buy guitars. It had a painting of a dog on it.
Okay.
And I like dogs.
Sure.
So that's a cool guitar. Let me try that out. And it just sounded great. So I kind of impulse bought it a little bit, which I probably shouldn't have. Unfortunately, it's gone a little bit to the great guitar gods in the sky now, because the neck is pulled so far forward, the intonation's totally gone. I took it to a luthier in Brighton, who was, you know, really good. We kind of came to the agreement that it would take so much work to fix it. It wasn't really worth it. So I think it's going to be more of a, luckily it's pretty, so now it's going to become a bit more of a showpiece, I think.
The wall hanger.
Yeah, the wall hanger. At least I got to record the album on it, though. So yeah. It is immortalized now.
What kind of dog was on it?
It's like a little beagle thing. I'm looking at it. Hang on, I'm looking at it right now. Yeah, like a little beagle on a mountain range with a setting sun.
Okay.
It's neat. It's a really pretty guitar.
What kind of banjo did you use on this record?
I use the Grafton. Actually, it wasn't even my banjo. I've bought one now. A Grafton's it's a British make. It's a guy called Andy Banjo. I hope that is his actual name. Who operates out of a warehouse a few miles from here, and he imports. I think he imports mostly American parts and builds banjos, and they're really nice. So certainly for the price as well, they're really, really reasonable. It was a Tubaphone tone ring, I believe.
Okay, sure.
Yeah.
And it's just a five string banjo tuned like a five string banjo.
Yeah, five string banjo open back.
Yeah. Did you have was it weird going from the guitar to the banjo, or it kind of came naturally to you?
Well, I've always kind of really liked banjo. Well, not always, but for a long time, I really, really liked banjo. I remember hearing a Violent Femmes song, Country Death song, was the first time I heard banjo. And sure. It has this, 'cause, you know, it has a great psych out bit in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
So ever since then, I wanted to play the banjo. But again, I bought a banjo and I noodled on it and never really did much. But then that same guitar teacher that I went to, he played banjo, and he showed me Clawhammer, and it was I really, really liked the way it sounded. So I basically didn't stop playing for a couple of weeks, to the point where I threw out my shoulder and couldn't play for a month.
Gosh. It's dedication. Yeah.
Yeah. So I kind of took to it pretty quick, but too quick, medically speaking.
Yeah. Repetitive stress injury.
Yeah. Yeah.
So where did you record the album?
In my flat.
Okay.
I got my buddy Dave in, and we did it one weekend in the flat, and I paid him in beer. It was very informal.
Nice. A good microphone, maybe, or no?
Yeah, I got a. What is it now? It's an AKG. It's a BZ 404 or something. I've forgotten now what it. But it's a nice, it's a really kind of wide diaphragm condenser that I got a good price secondhand.
Yeah, and was Tompkins Square already on your radar when you were recording this, or how did that all come about?
Well, that was a strange set of coincidences, really, because. I was playing around Brighton and really not getting to play as much as I was like, and getting quite frustrated at what seemed to be like people just weren't into it. So on the night where they contacted me, I was playing a show, and I was in a really bad mood and a really bad place, and I was sort of saying to myself, this is it. I'm not going to do live stuff anymore because no one digs it. And that night, Tompkins Square got in contact with me, and I own a bunch of Tompkins Square records completely independently of that. So it was a bit, oh, okay, maybe someone does dig this.
Yeah.
So it did pretty much come out of the blue to me at that time anyway.
And that was what got you started on doing the recording?
Yeah, Josh was like, do you want to record an album?
Wow.
And I was, okay, yeah, let's go.
Yeah, I don't know where he's got his ears to the ground in a million different places. I don't know how he finds all these amazing artists, but he does. So, yeah, it's
incredible. I finally tracked it down, actually, because for a long time I didn't really question it because I didn't want to ruin it.
Yeah.
Jinx, exactly. But I think it comes back to, so Jeff Davidson from WFMU had sent him my stuff. But Jeff Davidson had been sent my stuff from another guy who lives in Brighton, another really great American primitive player. His name's Simon, but I think he goes by online Doc Turtle.
Okay.
But from a really early point on in my playing in Brighton, he was like the only person who would ever come and see me. So it's really, honestly, it's kind of almost entirely thanks to him, really, that cycle of events happened.
Yeah. And the trip you said when you got the Henry Kaiser guitar, was that to the big American Primitive Festival that just took place?
Yeah, it was.
How was that?
Oh, it was insane. It was my first time in the States anyway, so it was already quite nuts. But I'm used to being the only solo guitar player on the bill, and then to be on, you know, a bill with some of the greatest solo guitar players in the world, and like really legendary names, just like hanging out with them and talking about weird stuff. Yeah, it was pretty mind blowing, and it was just a really great vibe there because I think everyone's kind of in the same boat. It's such a like a solo affair playing this sort of music. You don't necessarily, you know, you're not in a band. You don't really hang out with the other players, so everyone, you know, was really excited mostly to be seeing at least a few other of the acts on the thing. So it was a really nice, almost like, I guess like a community vibe there. So I really hope it happens again because it was really good.
Yeah. Anything you saw there technique wise or playing wise that sort of inspired you or you're like, I need to try that?
Yeah, I mean compositionally, just see everyone's stuff. It's nice when everyone's got their own voice, you know. I always try not to, I don't want to copy other people. It's a thing I consciously try and avoid. But certainly just to be seeing other people just expressing themselves, you know, in a sympathetic way, if not necessarily something you want to emulate because you want to maintain your own voice.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, it was great.
So the album came out, you never were much of a dancer last month. Are you touring a lot? What are you doing these days?
I'm not touring as of yet. I think we're hopefully trying to look to get something together at some point. But I'm booking shows a bit more solidly at the moment. I'm doing lots of in-stores and records and record shops, doing things like this, talking to people on Skype. But yeah, you know, it's filling up. Hopefully, I would like to go do some tours. I'd like to do a European tour and hopefully a stateside tour at some point.
That'd be great. I would love to see you. Well, thank you so much, Gwennifer. This was a lot of fun.
Oh, thank you very much. It was a good one.
Yeah. Keep us posted on everything.
Will do.
All right. Bye.